You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Lanzalone Show. And I am very excited today to be welcoming Colonel Douglas McGregor back to the show. Sir, how are you doing today?
Yeah, great, great, Kyle.
Well, very happy to have you here. As events around the globe unfold, your insight is absolutely crucial. So I have a lot I want to talk to you about today. Hopefully we could get through it all. The military buildup in the Middle East, will Trump attack Iran, and of course, Ted Cruz and some recent statements he made regarding regime change across the globe. So first off, I want to ask you about the significance of the military buildup. People are pointing out that this is the largest U.S. military buildup since the Iraq War in 2003. Just how much firepower have we sent to the Middle East? Is this the size force you would need to go ahead and launch an attack on Iran?
Well, that's a separate question. Is it enough? And that's tougher to answer. The first question, we should also note that a lot of the firepower that will ultimately be delivered will be delivered by B-2 bombers. And if we can suppress the enemy air defenses, I think we could eventually see B-52s as well. So I think in terms of bomb tonnage, you'll probably see an amount of tonnage dumped on Iran that will be perhaps half of what was dumped on Europe during World War II. That's how horrific and damaging this could become.
And so what do you think about the targets that the Trump administration is likely to pick, at least for these initial strikes?
Well, you know, targets, that's a very important question, and it's not an easy one to answer. An awful lot depends on what guidance the targeteers are getting from higher command. That means that President Trump, along with his senior military advisor, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and the Secretary of War, will all stand around a table and they'll agree, I would suspect, on some number of priorities. Clearly, command and control will be at the top of the list. They don't expect, I think, to kill everyone in the Iranian government, but they can certainly kill some, and they probably are interested in doing that. They also want to disrupt the command and control. That means destroy whatever terminals on the ground that connect Iran to satellites or long-distance communications of any kind. If they can sever the links between subordinate units, air defense batteries, and strike forces, they'll try to do that. That's very tedious. But the first thing that they'll do before they even strike command and control, I suspect, is try to suppress the integrated air defense system. That's going to be very tough. We think that this integrated air defense system is probably going to work. The last time around, it did not work. And a lot of people didn't notice that when the president of Iran went to Moscow, before the public statements were made under his breath, President Putin said to the president from Iran, "You should have let us help you." Meaning that the Iranians had said to them, "Look, we appreciate all your technology. Just give us the equipment, give us whatever you can in terms of missiles. We'll get the job done." Well, that didn't work very well in terms of enemy air and missile defense. So the Israelis and the Americans were able to penetrate it. Now, that wasn't enough to stop the Iranians from firing large numbers of missiles. it never is. But if you can't suppress the enemy air defenses, then you cannot get into the airspace over Iran and hit the critical targets. And those, in addition to command and control, will involve the missiles that are being fired at Israel and fired at our bases and at our ships. Now, after that, there are all sorts of other targets. But I would sort of single out those three. Number one, suppressing enemy air defenses, command and control, and then strike the missile arsenal, principally the theater ballistic missiles that you're most concerned about. Because, Kyle, once they lift off, they are hypersonic. Mm-hmm. Frankly, you can't shoot them down. If you do, you're getting incredibly lucky. So if you can destroy much of that on the ground, you're going to try and do it.
So, you mentioned there what Putin said to the Iranian president before. I'm just wondering what kind of assistance you think Russia is actually offering to provide to Iran. And do you think there's more of that assistance in place now, or Chinese assistance as well, than there was when Israel and the U.S. attacked in June?
Both the Russians and the Chinese, I think, have provided assistance, technical assistance, as well as technology and equipment. The Russians, however, I think, because they want to finish this war in Ukraine, have agreed that China should take the lead. And the Chinese are very, very concerned about Iran. Remember, Iran is part of the Belt and Road Project. Iran is a critical player in the larger global structure that the BRICS is trying to build. And finally, Iran is the source of oil and natural gas that China depends upon. 30% of China's oil comes from Iran, perhaps larger. We don't know. But the point is, they're not going to allow Iran to be destroyed and allow that oil to be disrupted. So China's got a lot invested in Iran right now. We know that they have provided hundreds of missiles. There was an airlift a couple of weeks ago involving 500 missiles. Now, we don't know the composition of the missiles in terms of what specific kinds of missiles we think we know some of it. One of them is probably this ship killer that the Chinese have developed, which has a range of out to 180, maybe 200 miles. It's very effective. It's very fast, very, very precise. I don't know where they are going to use those. They could potentially put them aboard small ships, but that's a danger, obviously, to our fleet. But the biggest problem for us are these Shahab 2, 1 and 2. They can reach out to almost 1,000 miles. They can threaten our ships at sea. They can threaten all of our bases. They can level, quite frankly, Israel if they decide to do it. Because they have enough on hand, thousands of these, that they can fire almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week until the enemy is utterly annihilated or destroyed, or they run out. But the problem for us is that they're much less likely to run out of missiles than we are, because we are dependent largely upon air and missile power. The bases we have been largely evacuated, except for those that are 1,000 miles beyond the borders of Iran, because those are the ones that we think are safe. Now, that may or may not be true. We'll find out. Hopefully, we're protecting those with air and missile defense. But my point is, once we have fired most of our missiles, whether they're air defense or strike missiles designed to go in and destroy specific targets on the ground in Iran, we have to reload. Remember, we have a 6,000-mile line of communications. The logistics is an enormous challenge for us. And we've got a lot of problems right now, everything from spare parts to missiles, ships that are exhausted, that have been run for months, sailors that are exhausted and tired. So I think the Air Force will carry most of this burden, but the Navy is out there performing its mission, but the Navy is short-legged. Each carrier battle group has one ammunition ship that carries additional munitions and missiles. Now, that still doesn't mean that some ships won't have to go back to harbors where there's specially designed materiel to load the missiles into the ships. But that, if you lose one of those ships, you're in a lot of trouble. We don't have that many out there. This is one of the reasons that I think people have now finally begun to express the concern with President Trump. You know, this may not work as it's currently planned. And that's a critical question to ask. Will this work? I'm not sure it will. And again, I've never seen evidence that an air and missile campaign alone is enough to win anything.
Absolutely. I do have this clip. This is Donald Trump at the State of Union last night discussing his Iran policy.
We are in negotiations with them. They want to make a deal, but we haven't heard those secret words. We will never have a nuclear weapon. My preference is to solve this problem through diplomacy. But one thing is certain, I will never allow the world's number one sponsor of terror, which they are by far, to have a nuclear weapon. Can't let that happen. And no nation should ever doubt America's resolve. We have the most powerful military on earth. I rebuilt the military in my first term. We're going to continue to do so. Also, we just approved a $1 trillion budget. We have no choice. We have to be strong. Because hopefully we will seldom have to use this great power that we built together. It's really called peace through strength, and it's been very, very effective.
So, Colonel McGregor, I'm wondering your thoughts on this idea. This military buildup in the Middle East, it's all about getting a better deal from the Iranians. We essentially scared them into capitulation. What do you think of that strategy?
It's a very dumb one. It's not going to work. We've already heard Witkoff, who was asked specifically about what are President Trump's feelings and so forth. And he expressed the view that both he and President Trump were surprised at the Iranians because they expected the massing of all this air and naval power to have been very intimidating and to have ultimately succeeded in frightening them to the negotiating table. People don't understand something. This is very important, Kyle. We see this, frankly, as something that we're doing for Israel more than anything else. And we think that we're there to intimidate. And if you don't buy the intimidation, well, then we'll punish you from the air and the sea. But that's about it. We're not interested in a long-term war with anybody. And I think when President Trump says that, he's being very honest. But for the Iranians, this is an existential question. They're facing what could be the disintegration of their state and society, depending upon how successful our air and missile strikes are. They know that. So for them, this is total war. And as soon as we attack, whether we launch a few missiles, a lot of missiles, whether we use B-2s up front or follow up F-22s later and so forth, doesn't matter. From their vantage point, this is about the existence of their state. So you have two different nation states with very different interests. And we have to understand that no matter what we do, the Iranians will not voluntarily submit under any circumstances to Israel and its hegemony over the region. That's an impossibility. They won't do it. Remember, Iran is Persia. It's a civilizational state. It's a great empire for a couple of thousand years. There's a lot of human capital in that country. They're not stupid people. These people are well-organized, well-equipped. They are smart. They're going to fight like hell. And if we think this is going to be easy, we've lost our minds. And then finally, the Iranians have said repeatedly, and we have chosen to describe them as liars who can't be believed, but they've said repeatedly, they don't want a nuclear weapon. In fact, the Supreme Leader has said that's off the table and out of the question as far as they're concerned. But we keep insisting. And this happens over the last 30 years, about every 6 months or so, someone like Netanyahu pops up and says, Iran is within 2 weeks of a nuclear weapon. The danger has never been greater. We have to stop this. I mean, how many times do we hear this over and over and over again? Let's drop the rest of the nonsense about the biggest state sponsor of terrorism. This is all Israeli propaganda. They've been saying the same things for 30, 40 years. At one point, it was true 40 years ago. It's not true now. It hasn't been true for a long time. So I hope President Trump is thinking a little more clearly than his remarks at the State of the Union would reflect.
So, Colonel McGregor, I remember back, 5 years ago now, right before the Russian invasion of Ukraine, you were one of the few analysts who was predicting Russia was going to invade based on their force posture that they have built up along the Ukrainian border. So I'm wondering, you know, looking at the two aircraft carrier strike groups, the hundreds of warplanes, the advanced air defense systems, all the logistics and other support aircraft and troops and ships that they've poured into the region, is this something the military would only do if they were planning for an attack, that this isn't just some bluff or some show of force like we would do, say, in North Korea and the Korean Peninsula to try to scare Kim?
We are going to attack Iran. I think that decision's been made. And when that was made clear, I think, to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, to General Kane, he also responded and said, well, we don't have enough firepower. And that's the principal reason for delay, to bring more missiles, more bombs, more explosives, more platforms, more capabilities into the region in order to inflict serious, serious damage on Iran. Now, we can, if we have to, over the next 2 to 3 weeks, we could potentially surge three more carrier battle groups. But I suspect what would happen is that the three carrier battle groups would come in and relieve the ones that are already there. Because remember, the Gerald Ford has been at sea now for 10 months and probably will have been at sea for a year before they finally are relieved. But that's about it. As far as aircraft in the Air Force's inventory, I think you've got at least a third to a half of all the air power that is at our disposal. And that also means that we have brought in all the missiles and bombs that we can find of all different types and kinds. So if this doesn't work, in other words, if after 2 weeks we find that we have fired everything and we're starting to run low, we'll have to scale back. We'll probably have to scale back after 5 to 7 days, the intensity anyway, because we won't be able to run everybody into the ground as well as shoot everything at the same pace. But by 2 weeks, we're going to have to make a decision. Where do we go from here? Do we live in a permanent state of hostility? Do we take a break? Because we may not be able to replenish all the stocks after that as rapidly as we would like. I think these things are being discussed behind closed doors.
Right. Absolutely. And I know that those discussions are happening behind closed doors, but actually this week we got a report in the Wall Street Journal and other places that the chairman, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had raised these issues with Donald Trump, told Trump there's a potential for American casualties. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on this actually getting leaked to the press. Is this a sign that the military is actually trying to be the most rational actor in the room and put a stop to this?
You know, that's hard for me to believe. The military was universally supportive of most of our interventions over the last 50, 60 years. And I include Vietnam in that count. Some expressed reservations, but nobody was ready to resign or retire over it. So I think it's hard for me to believe that the military is standing up and saying, Mr. President, reconsider, don't do this. I think instead what he's been told is that we may not have enough, and that's why you've had the delay. And I think we're going to see a continual feed of platforms and munitions and logistical support into the theater from the time this thing begins until whenever somebody decides to end it. And that's an important question. How do you end this thing? In other words, everybody is assuming Iran is going to fall apart like a house of cards. Well, what if the house of cards doesn't fall apart? What if you're suddenly dealing with a very stubborn adversary? Maybe you've killed 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 Iranians. They might well kill a few hundred of us, maybe more. They could get lucky and hit a ship at sea. They don't necessarily need to sink any of those ships, by the way. Just attacking them, attacking a carrier, putting a hole in the deck is enough to put it out of operation. But they'll hit the bases and they'll hit Americans on the ground wherever they find them. And remember, we've also got another problem now. Since the Huckabee interview, virtually all the Muslim countries have come out against us in a very strong manner. You now have people in Egypt and Saudi Arabia and all across the region who figured out, you know, we're next on the menu. Mm-hmm. And I always try to point out to people that there's one country that we haven't heard from, and that, of course, is Turkey. Or Turkey, as they like to call it now. And they know that if they stand by and watch Iran sink into the abyss and be utterly destroyed, they're going to have to deal with refugees. They're going to have to deal with a water crisis of their own, with people pouring into the country looking for some place to go and survive. They also know that the Israelis regard them as a potentially more serious threat than Iran. So they may be saying, well, what are the Israelis going to do next? Ask the Americans to destroy us for Israel? So I think the Turks are much more on the sidelines watching for an opportunity to become involved. And that depends on how things go in Iran. You know, there's another possibility, Kyle, that nobody likes to discuss. That is that they do a lot of damage to us and we're embarrassed. Mm-hmm. We end up looking weak. Remember, most of the world thinks that we are invulnerable and invincible. That's not necessarily because we are. It's because nobody has really challenged us that could. We have had very weak opponents to deal with over the last 35, 40 years. That's not going to be the case now. Iran is no pushover. And then you have the Russians and the Chinese. What are they going to do? Will Chinese pilots get into Iranian aircraft and fly fighters for them? That could easily happen. We have some Americans flying F-16s for the Ukrainians right now. They're quote-unquote volunteers, and they're there with permission from the national command authorities. You could see that kind of thing. We flew against the Russians in Vietnam. So anything is possible now. You're in a different world from the one that we were in just 30 years ago. And Iran is not isolated. It's always best if you can isolate your opponent. It's not the case with Iran at all.
So, you know, while kind of, or actually, I do want to ask you about this. This article, and this is, you know, been gaining a lot of attention on the Gerald R. Ford. They're having trouble with the sewage system. It's causing a backup. I'm wondering if you think that this kind of thing could actually potentially hamper U.S. operations if, you know, the thousands of sailors aboard the ship can't relieve themselves, then how can you possibly have a functioning war ship there? Is this something that could get in the way, or is this the kind of thing that if they really want a war, they'll work their way around?
I think it's very serious. And they could do it the old-fashioned way in the Navy, which is you hang over the side of the ship and let it all go. That's the way it was done for hundreds of years in many navies. But I know that they're in Suda Bay in Crete. I think they've got people looking at the systems and they're trying to repair them. There's some evidence that some of the sailors may have shoved undershirts into the system to plug up these toilets. I think they've got a lot of people who are very tired, very exhausted, worn out from these long deployments down to the Caribbean and now in the Mediterranean. So we'll see if they can repair it. I hope they can. There was someone wrote recently that you'd have to go to a shipyard to have this system fully repaired. I hope that's not the case. And as I said, there are three other carrier battle groups that you could get ready over the next 2 or 3 weeks and then send forth to relieve these two. That may yet happen. But in the meantime, I think the president wants to act. He's talked about acting a great deal. I think he believes strongly that he can pulverize Iran into submission. I don't, but that's just my opinion, and I could be wrong.
So my last question kind of on this war is, I see a possibility here where effectively the American and the Israeli interceptors run out before the Iranian offensive missiles do, at which time the American soldiers in Israel will be really vulnerable to Iranian attack. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean defeat for the United States or Israel because both possess a nuclear arsenal. So if the U.S. or Israel start losing, are you concerned that this could go nuclear, that they could essentially just try to end the war in their favor by dropping a bomb on Tehran or other major Iranian cities?
The only concern I have there is with the Israelis. That's an ever-present danger. And I think the Israelis would actually sort of use that as a means of threatening us into action and telling us if we don't do X, Y, and Z, well, then we'll turn to a nuclear weapon. I hope not, but I think that's a danger. I do not think, either President Trump or anybody around him is going to argue for the use of a nuclear weapon against anybody. I just don't see it. I think, you know, I don't even think that President Trump really wants this war. But the people that put him in the White House, the people that control Congress, they want it. Remember that the only time last night where there was any degree of unity across party lines was when President Trump talked about his views on Iran and everyone got up and clapped, Democrats and Republicans. I think we know why. I think the Zionist billionaires that constitute the real strength behind AIPAC, even though AIPAC says it only spends $3 million on lobbying, but that's minuscule and irrelevant. It's the hundreds of millions of dollars that are disseminated or distributed, rather, to people running for office or to people who are running against others for office that have the biggest impact. So everybody wants to stay on the good side and continue to get money that allows them to stay in office. So I think we're going to attack. That's why. But I don't think it's something that is near and dear to President Trump's heart at all.
Unfortunately, I think you're right. Before I let you go, I have one clip of Senator Ted Cruz to play for you.
Okay.
Nuclear facilities was the single most important national security
that
decision
took
of the president.
Some serious.
It took enormous cojones, as humans would say.
Exactly.
Look, and it was a spectacular success. We're at a moment, Joe, where in the next 6 months, we could realistically see the regimes in Iran, Venezuela, and Cuba all fall, and we could see them replaced with governments that want to be friends with America. Now, let me be clear. There are a thousand ways that can go wrong, so I'm not being Pollyannish about that. But if that happened, that would be the biggest geopolitical shift since the fall of the Berlin Wall.
So, Colonel McGregor, I know that Ted Cruz is a fool. At the same time, he does have the ear of President Donald Trump. He is known as being one of the smarter senators in Washington, D.C. How do you respond to this idea that we're going to get three regime changes in 6 months?
Well, I would remind everybody of the Wolfowitz Pearl Plan, which involved the conquest of Baghdad, Damascus, and Tehran. And the idea was that you intervene first in Iraq and Syria. Once you have knocked out those regimes, then you move on to intervening in Iran. Well, it didn't work very well because foolish people decided to occupy Iraq, even though there were many voices privately that said, whatever you do, you don't want to occupy this country. Keep the army intact, keep the political structure intact. That is the administration. And then you can move your force off to Syria, repeat the performance, and then potentially use it again in Tehran. I don't think it ever made any sense, and I never took it really seriously at all. But I think this falls into the same category. And then again, you got to remember, Ted Cruz is sort of like Rubio. Rubio and Cruz are Cubans, either whole Cuban or partially Cuban. They're committed to that lobby, and they're acting in what they think is in the interest of the Cubans that live in the United States as well as the country. Frankly, who governs in Cuba, as we learned under President Kennedy, doesn't matter very much as long as there are no nuclear weapons in Cuba and no missiles that can reach our shores. And he accurately said, well, we don't need to go to war with Russia or anybody else over Cuba. We'll simply demand that. That's what we got, and we've lived with that. So I don't think we should take that very seriously. Venezuela is not under our control. The government in Venezuela has made it very clear they're not going to take any orders from us. We didn't conquer Venezuela. We just kidnapped the leader of the government and his wife. And that took a combination of superb soldiering and excellent technology, but also millions of dollars to pay people off. So I just don't see those things happening.
I agree with you there, and I do hope that's the case. Colonel Douglas McGregor, thank you so much for your time on the show today, and I hope I could get you back on the show sometime in the future.
Okay, Kyle, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com, code NEWS.